Сейчас вы будете выполнять задание по аудированию. Каждый текст прозвучит два раза. После первого и второго прослушивания у вас будет время для выполнения и проверки заданий. Все паузы включены в аудиозапись. Остановка и повторное воспроизведение аудиозаписи не предусмотрены. По окончании выполнения всего раздела аудирования перенесите свои ответы в бланк ответов номер один. Задание 1. Вы услышите 6 высказываний. Установите соответствие между высказываниями каждого говорящего AF и утверждениями, данными в списке 1-7. Используйте каждое утверждение, обозначенное соответствующей цифрой, только один раз. В задании есть одно лишнее утверждение. Вы услышите запись дважды. Занесите свои ответы в таблицу. У вас есть 20 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданием. Now we are ready to start.
Speaker A.
British royal weddings generate enormous popular interest. Thousands lined the streets when Queen Victoria married Prince Albert in 1840. It's often said to be the first white wedding. When Prince William and Kate Middleton got engaged in 2010, the engagement ring attracted special attention. It had belonged to William's mother, the late Princess Diana. The wedding day, the 29th of April 2011, was a public holiday. Thousands of guests attended the ceremony in Westminster Abbey, and viewers around the world watched on TV as the couple walked down the aisle.
Speaker B.
Weddings in Scotland are similar to those in England. The bride usually wears white, the best man makes a funny speech during the reception, and the newlyweds are eager to leave for their honeymoon. There is one obvious difference. You can see the bridegroom's legs. In many Scottish weddings, men wear a traditional Highland dress, including a kilt instead of trousers. Another difference is the music. Often, a piper plays the bagpipes as the bride and groom leave the church. After the meal, there is a traditional dance called a shailid.
Speaker C.
A day before a British-Pakistani wedding, female relatives draw a beautiful, elaborate pattern on the bride's hands in a ceremony called mehndi. At the same time, the two families tease each other in songs. Pakistani weddings take place at the bride's home, in large tents in the garden. The bride wears bright colors, usually red or purple. After the wedding, the couple see each other in a mirror, and the bride removes her veil. Then female guests steal the groom's shoes, and he has to pay to get them back.
Speaker D.
In traditional Russian weddings, the groom arrives at the bride's home early in the morning to pay a ransom for her. It is played out in a comical fashion to entertain everyone. After the civil ceremony, the newlyweds break 2 crystal glasses. The more glass shards they create, the longer their happiness will last. They also release 2 white doves to symbolize their love. At the reception, the word gorka, meaning bitter, is often heard. At this point, the newlyweds give a long kiss to take out the bitter taste of the spirits.
Speaker E.
There are 6 essential wedding rituals in China, known as the 6 etiquette. They include the proposal and the matching of birth dates. After the boy's parents have negotiated everything with the bride-to-be's family, they have their children's birth dates matched. If the result of fortune-telling is good, the bride's parents submit the bride price, and the groom's family send an elaborate array of food, cakes, and religious items. Before the wedding ceremony, the two families arrange a wedding day according to Chinese Tongxing. The actual wedding ceremony also consists of many elaborate parts.
Speaker F.
In preparation for their wedding, Indigenous Australians choose sponsors, older, respected persons, who will give them spiritual and marital guidance throughout their lifetime. At the ceremony, the couple and sponsors make a commitment to God And even if the couple separates, in the eyes of God, they are still husband and wife. A wedding is a time of feasting, visiting, and the giveaway. The bride and groom make gifts to give to each person attending the celebration. The type of gift depends on the talent and financial ability of the couple.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now you will hear the text again.
Speaker A.
British royal weddings generate enormous popular interest. Thousands lined the streets when Queen Victoria married Prince Albert in 1840. It's often said to be the first white wedding. When Prince William and Kate Middleton got engaged in 2010, the engagement ring attracted special attention. It had belonged to William's mother, the late Princess Diana. The wedding day, the 29th of April 2011, was a public holiday. Thousands of guests attended the ceremony in Westminster Abbey, and viewers around the world watched on TV as the couple walked down the aisle.
Speaker B.
Weddings in Scotland are similar to those in England. The bride usually wears white, the best man makes a funny speech during the reception, and the newlyweds are eager to leave for their honeymoon. There is one obvious difference. You can see the bridegroom's legs. In many Scottish weddings, men wear a traditional Highland dress, including a kilt instead of trousers. Another difference is the music. Often, a piper plays the bagpipes as the bride and groom leave the church. After the meal, there is a traditional dance called a shailid.
Speaker C.
A day before a British-Pakistani wedding, female relatives draw a beautiful, elaborate pattern on the bride's hands in a ceremony called mehndi. At the same time, the two families tease each other in songs. Pakistani weddings take place at the bride's home, in large tents in the garden. The bride wears bright colors, usually red or purple. After the wedding, the couple see each other in a mirror, and the bride removes her veil. Then female guests steal the groom's shoes, and he has to pay to get them back.
Speaker D.
In traditional Russian weddings, the groom arrives at the bride's home early in the morning to pay a ransom for her. It is played out in a comical fashion to entertain everyone. After the civil ceremony, the newlyweds break two crystal glasses. The more glass shards they create, the longer their happiness will last. They also release two white doves to symbolize their love. At the reception, the word gorka, meaning bitter, is often heard. At this point, the newlyweds give a long kiss to take out the bitter taste of the spirits.
Speaker E.
There are six essential wedding rituals in China, known as the six etiquette. They include the proposal and the matching of birth dates. After the boy's parents have negotiated everything with the bride-to-be's family, they have their children's birth dates matched. If the result of fortune-telling is good, the bride's parents submit the bride price, and the groom's family send an elaborate array of food, cakes, and religious items. Before the wedding ceremony, the two families arrange a wedding day according to Chinese Tongxing. The actual wedding ceremony also consists of many elaborate parts.
Speaker F.
In preparation for their wedding, Indigenous Australians choose sponsors, older, respected persons, who will give them spiritual and marital guidance throughout their lifetime. At the ceremony, the couple and sponsors make a commitment to God, and even if the couple separates, in the eyes of God, they are still husband and wife. A wedding is a time of feasting, visiting, and the giveaway. The bride and groom make gifts to give to each person attending the celebration. The type of gift depends on the talent and financial ability of the couple.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers. Задание 2. вы услышите диалог. Определите, какие из приведенных утверждений AG соответствуют содержанию текста 1 – true, какие не соответствуют 2 – false, и о чем в тексте не сказано. То есть на основании текста нельзя дать ни положительного, ни отрицательного ответа. 3 – not stated. Занесите номер выбранного вами варианта ответа в таблицу. Вы услышите запись дважды. У вас есть 20 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданием. Now we are ready to start.
Hello, this is Sarah Thompson at College Standhill Radio 1. Welcome to Culture Vulture, your guide to cultural events in our town. And here's great news of a fascinating new event that might one day become our number one attraction. As you know, our town has several vibrant ethnic communities, and the university in particular now boasts students from more than 40 countries.
Sarah, you are absolutely right.
Dear students and teachers, be all ears, as with me today is the president of the ESF, Steve Lund. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Sarah. I'm pleased to announce that this summer, the Town Council and the European Students Forum have decided to organize our first ever multicultural festival.
Steve, can you tell us more about this idea?
The idea originated at the university, really. When you've got people of dozen nationalities in your class, you can learn so much from them, and it's such fun. So we thought it's a shame that the rest of the community isn't able to share some of that experience.
What will the festival involve?
We're still at the planning stage, but we'd definitely like to have several concerts, an arts and crafts fair, where people would be able to learn to make things like origami paper toys or raku pottery, and also a multi-ethnic fashion show, where you'd be able to see what national costumes, such as a Korean hanbok or a Vietnamese eye dye, look like.
Anything on a more serious note, perhaps?
We might have several lectures and panel discussions on topics to do with multicultural Europe.
It sounds fascinating. What about food?
There'll definitely be food from all the countries involved, and drinks as well, including Czech beer and Hungarian wine. We hope that with the generous funding from the Town Council and from EU funds, the food will be the only thing you have to pay for.
That sounds very promising. And I understand you've got an announcement to make?
Yes, an appeal, in fact. As I said, we're still at the planning stage, and I'd like to invite anyone or any group of people who'd like to contribute to the festival to contact us with their ideas. You can do that through the festival website, or you can just drop into our office next to the university library.
Steve, thank you very much. So everybody is very, very welcome indeed. Thank you for being with Culture Vulture today, and we'll talk again in a week's time. Bye!
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now you will hear the text again.
Hello, this is Sarah Thompson at College Standhill Radio 1. Welcome to Culture Vulture, your guide to cultural events in our town. And here's great news of a fascinating new event that might one day become our number one attraction. As you know, our town has several vibrant ethnic communities, and the university in particular now boasts students from more than 40 countries.
Sarah, you are absolutely right.
Dear students and teachers, be all ears, as with me today is the president of the ESF, Steve Lund. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Sarah. I'm pleased to announce that this summer, the Town Council and the European Students Forum have decided to organize our first ever multicultural festival.
Steve, can you tell us more about this idea?
The idea originated at the university, really. When you've got people of dozen nationalities in your class, you can learn so much from them, and it's such fun. So we thought it's a shame that the rest of the community isn't able to share some of that experience.
What will the festival involve?
We're still at the planning stage, but we'd definitely like to have several concerts, an arts and crafts fair, where people would be able to learn to make things like origami paper toys or raku pottery, and also a multi-ethnic fashion show, where you'd be able to see what national costumes, such as a Korean hanbok or a Vietnamese eye dye look like.
Anything on a more serious note, perhaps?
We might have several lectures and panel discussions on topics to do with multicultural Europe.
It sounds fascinating. What about food?
There'll definitely be food from all the countries involved, and drinks as well, including Czech beer and Hungarian wine. We hope that with the generous funding from the town council and from EU funds, the food will be the only thing you have to pay for.
That sounds very promising. And I understand you've got an announcement to make?
Yes, an appeal, in fact. As I said, we're still at the planning stage, and I'd like to invite anyone or any group of people who'd like to contribute to the festival to contact us with their ideas. You can do that through the festival website, or you can just drop into our office next to the university library.
Steve, thank you very much. So everybody is very, very welcome indeed. Thank you for being with Culture Vulture today, and we'll talk again in a week's time. Bye.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers. Задание 3.9. Вы услышите интервью. В заданиях 3.9 запишите в поле ответа цифру 1, 2 или 3, соответствующую выбранному вами варианту ответа. Вы услышите запись дважды.
У вас есть 50 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданиями.
Now we are ready to start.
Good morning. I would like to see Mr. Clark. I have got an appointment with him.
Hello, can I have your name?
Sure. I'm Sarah O'Brien, a journalist. Mr. Clark has agreed to give me an interview.
Right, let me see. Oh yes, Mr. Clark is waiting for you. Please, come in.
Thank you, you're very kind. Good morning, Mr. Clark, and thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to ask you some questions. I feel really privileged. My name is Sarah O'Brien, and I work for a magazine called Teenage World.
Good morning, Sarah. It's my pleasure to have you here. I'm happy that you're so keen on my work. Does it mean that your readers are willing to know about our national history, customs, and traditions?
Very much so. Especially, they'd like to know about traditional holidays and celebrations. You see, a lot of teenagers feel that many traditional holidays were replaced by modern ones. Do you agree with this opinion?
Probably, yes. By the way, do you know anything about the holiday which is celebrated today?
Holiday? Today? As far as I know, it's just an ordinary Tuesday, and all of us are at work.
Yes, it's Tuesday, but not an ordinary one. Do you remember that Lent starts next week, and that Tuesday before Lent is called Shrove Tuesday?
How interesting! What kind of celebration is it?
It's a day of penitence to clean the soul, and the day of celebration is the last chance to feast before the 40 days of Lent begins. Shrove Tuesday is sometimes called Pancake Day.
Oh, yes, I've heard something about Pancake Day.
Well, it's called pancake because of the tradition to eat fried batter. But there's more to Shrove Tuesday than pigging out on pancakes. Pancakes themselves are part of an ancient custom with deeply religious roots.
I'm sorry for being so ignorant, but where does the second name come from?
Shrove Tuesday gets its name from the ritual of shriving that Christians used to undergo on this day in the past. In shriving, a person confesses his or her sins and receives absolution for them. When a person receives absolution for the sins, he or she is forgiven for them and released from the guilt and pain they have caused them. Shrove Tuesday is a day of celebration as well. It's the day before Lent, which is a time of abstinence, of giving things up. So, Shrove Tuesday is the last chance to indulge yourself and to use up the foods that aren't allowed during Lent.
Are any things forbidden?
During Lent, there are many foods that some Christians will not eat. Foods such as meat, fish, fats, eggs, dairy products. So that no food was wasted, families would have a feast on the Shriving Tuesday and eat up all the foods that wouldn't last the 40 days of Lent without going off.
I know about pancake races. Are they connected with Shriving Tuesday?
There is such possibility. Pancake races are thought to have begun in 1445. The legend says that a woman had lost track of the time on Shrove Tuesday and was busy cooking pancakes in her kitchen. Suddenly, she heard the church bell ringing to call the faithful to the church for confession. The woman raced out of her house and ran all the way to the church, still holding her frying pan and wearing her apron.
It's funny, but now I understand why contestants have to toss their pancakes at both the start and the finish, and are expected to wear an apron and a scarf.
Good, but it's also important to go to a church service after this race.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now, you will hear the text again.
Good morning. I would like to see Mr. Clark. I have got an appointment with him.
Hello, can I have your name?
Sure, I'm Sarah O'Brien, a journalist. Mr. Clark has agreed to give me an interview.
Right, let me see. Oh yes, Mr. Clark is waiting for you. Please, come in.
Thank you, you're very kind. Good morning, Mr. Clark, and thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to ask you some questions. I feel really privileged. My name is Sarah O'Brien, and I work for a magazine called Teenage World.
Good morning, Sarah. It's my pleasure to have you here. I'm happy that you're so keen on my work. Does it mean that your readers are willing to know about our national history, customs, and traditions?
Very much so. Especially, they'd like to know about traditional holidays and celebrations. You see, a lot of teenagers feel that many traditional holidays were replaced by modern ones. Do you agree with this opinion?
Probably, yes. By the way, do you know anything about the holiday which is celebrated today?
Holiday? Today? As far as I know, it's just an ordinary Tuesday, and all of us are at work.
Yes, it's Tuesday, but not an ordinary one. Do you remember that Lent starts next week, and that Tuesday before Lent is called Shrove Tuesday?
How interesting! What kind of celebration is it?
It's a day of penitence to clean the soul, and the day of celebration is the last chance to feast before the 40 days of Lent begins. Shrove Tuesday is sometimes called Pancake Day.
Oh yes, I've heard something about Pancake Day.
Well, it's called pancake because of the tradition to eat fried batter. But there's more to Shrove Tuesday than pigging out on pancakes. Pancakes themselves are part of an ancient custom with deeply religious roots.
I'm sorry for being so ignorant, but where does the second name come from?
Shrove Tuesday gets its name from the ritual of shriving that Christians used to undergo on this day in the past. In shriving, a person confesses his or her sins and receives absolution for them. When a person receives absolution for the sins, he or she is forgiven for them and released from the guilt and pain they have caused them. Shrove Tuesday is a day of celebration as well. It's the day before Lent, which is a time of abstinence, of giving things up. So, Shrove Tuesday is the last chance to indulge yourself and to use up the foods that aren't allowed during Lent.
Are any things forbidden?
During Lent, there are many foods that some Christians will not eat. Foods such as meat, fish, fats, eggs, dairy products. So that no food was wasted, families would have a feast on the Shriving Tuesday and eat up all the foods that wouldn't last the 40 days of Lent without going off.
I know about pancake races. Are they connected with Shriving Tuesday?
There is such possibility. Pancake races are thought to have begun in 1445. The legend says that a woman had lost track of the time on Shrove Tuesday and was busy cooking pancakes in her kitchen. Suddenly, she heard the church bell ringing to call the faithful to the church for confession. The woman raced out of her house and ran all the way to the church, still holding her frying pan and wearing her apron.
It's funny, but now I understand why contestants have to toss their pancakes at both the start and the finish, and are expected to wear an apron and a scarf.
Good, but it's also important to go to a church service after this race.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers. This is the end of the listening test. Время, отведенное на выполнение заданий, истекло.